searching for answers, wandering in the dark, looking for that glimmer of light that resonates with your soul and spirit. As you step into this new era that some indigenous people refer to as the Rainbow Bridge, without a compass, without a guide, yet needing some help to navigate your way through this spiritual maze, look no further. We've got the map, the Searcher's Roadmap. Now here's your host for the Searcher's Roadmap, Rhonda Harris.
Rhonda. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Searcher's Roadmap. I have Kimba Arum with us today. She's a beautiful sound healer and musician and very talented and gifted in numerous things of sound therapy, herbology, Reiki, flower and gem essences, and aromatherapy. She also works with light and color and has incorporated these diverse elements into a multidimensional approach to healing in her sound therapy private practice. So today we're going to talk to Kimba about some of these things, and we're also going to find out about a new project about water that's a film that she's been producing and is now getting ready to be released. Kimba, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Oh, you're so very welcome. So to let people understand what sound therapy is, because some people that are listeners may have never heard of it or aren't real sure what it is, could you kind of give them a description of what it is and how it works?
Well, that's a pretty vast topic, but
I know.
You know, a summary of that, I would say that, you know, we intuitively know that sound, music, vibrations affect us very deeply. Most people associate sound with things from the environment that come in, you know, without us invoking them, just from mm-hmm. city noise or nature sounds, but also music. So anything in the audible range we associate with vibrations and sound that we can hear and that affect us. We're also affected by vibrations, or we wouldn't call them sounds, but vibrations that we don't hear with our ears in the audible range. Most people hear between about 20,000 hertz. That's the average frequency range of what we can detect with our ears. So sound therapy is a way to use vibrations, usually in the audible range, that humans have been using since the beginning of time, basically. We use it in ceremony. We use it in when we have songs that we enjoy listening to, chants. Many cultures around the world have used this for thousands of years as a science for healing, especially the Ayurvedic and Chinese cultures, two of the longest documented cultures with a heritage of healing arts. Sound was a huge part of their healing. And so we understand now, with the new physics that is emerging, that everything ultimately is vibration on its most essential level. It's not really things, little tiny objects that are like hard balls rotating around each other. Everything is it's both a particle and a wave, but sound is a wave, and fields are what comprise all of creation, all the way from light and beyond the visible range of light in both directions, and sound is a part of that spectrum. And so what I like about using sound is it's so visceral. It can move you, not only your heart, but physically. It can vibrate you if you're, you know, on a train, and or a sound is, you know, so loud that it vibrates your body from huge speakers. So sound is kind of like, I think of it a lot like water. It's kind of right on that edge of existence and non-existence as far as physical matter. It's right on the edge, like DNA. It's also a wave. It's a spiral. It exists, but it's kind of touching to the world beyond. And water is like this too. The wave of the water is the membrane between the worlds. And we are physical beings, but we also are non-physical beings. We have energy bodies that, during the Kali Yuga, this dark time, we've forgotten that we are primarily energy, but as much energy as we are physical matter. We tend to focus on the matter part that we can see and touch and feel and taste and hear in a certain range. And so what sound does, the reason it's therapeutic is it connects us to this world of spirit, everything that we cannot see, to the world of energy. And it's that medium, it's that messenger that connects us to remind us, ah, we are not this problem. We are not this aching body. We are not this emotional dilemma. It kind of frees us because it's connecting us to the greater world beyond the five senses. And so that's why I love working with this, with sound. It seems to be the most effective, quickest, least harmful, and you know, just universal way to heal and to find balance and equilibrium.
And I really like how you work with the planet as well in trying to gently awaken her through sacred sound, and doing it in different places around the world where you've done it outside, and, you know, put that vibration into the air for that area and for the world, the universe in a whole. And, you know, the other night we did the new moon ceremony and sacred journeying with you. And can you tell us a little bit about this time we're in now, since this new moon is so powerful with what we're going into?
You're talking about the one on the spring equinox.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, March 20th. This year was, might not happen again like this in our lifetime, this alignment. Now, I'm not an astrologer.
Right.
Very interested in it, and I am slowly learning in addition to all the other things that I study. But, you know, I believe as above, so below. And the mm-hmm. as above is, you know, what the blueprint of these geometrical alignments of the solar beings of these stars are teaching us, and how they affect us and influence us. You know, we can rise above and beyond their effects, and sometimes you want to if they seem to be negative effects or more mm-hmm. dissonant ones. But knowing their effects is the first step, so then you can work with them. Some of them are naturally harmonious, and some are a little more challenging, but they're always for our growth. Everything is designed to make us grow. And I think know thyself is also knowing the larger self, which is the cosmos. The self mm-hmm. is the Brahma, it's the one being. So continue in school. You know, it's a continual education. And looking at this equinox, you know, we decided to do a sound journey on that day and ceremony to honor that the fact that equinoxes was considered by the alchemists the most powerful day of the year to begin the great work. And mm-hmm. what is the great work? The great work is self-realization, attaining enlightenment. Every being is here to realize their potential, their highest potential, not just what we do in the world, but to become a realized being, to become a son of the Creator, to realize that we are light. And the great work is about that in many different languages and different allegories of describing this process and the hero's journey, you know, the journey of the tarot. And spring equinox in Aries, as we enter, you know, Aries is kind of like the beginning, that first step. And this year it happened on to be on a new moon, but also a total eclipse. And eclipses, you know, sometimes they can be partial. It wasn't visible from where we were, but the energy is definitely there. This one was a really intense one, I have to say, just looking mm-hmm. back. Like, wow. I mean, not easy. Some of a lot of people, huge challenges, relationship challenges. And I was going through a major cleanse that my body decided to do in the middle of this very busy time, and with the water in my body. And it's all water. You know, this was in Pisces. So this Pisces eclipse emphasizes kind of like mystical things and hidden things that are discovered or clarified. So things come to light. But also because it's a new moon, it's like looking into the darkest, you know, that all the things that you can't see are illuminated by the light, and some you might not have wanted to look at, and then you have to, and then it can be difficult. So the more clear we are, the easier our spiritual journey is. So basically, this was the beginning of a new season, and this is the time when the Earth's axis, you know, is neither tilted away nor toward the sun. It's kind of right on that balance point. And we actually had a great time. The two musicians that I work with, one of them was on the equinox. We were balancing eggs, and because they said, well, that's the only day and the time of the year where you can, they'll actually balance on their head, you know. And he got like six of them perfectly balanced. It was amazing. And so, you know, balance is the key, is like finding that center that's not polarized toward light or dark. That's our immortal nature that isn't in time. It's beyond time. It's our higher self. If you align on the spring equinox and with all these powerful energies, that was what we were attempting to anchor, you know, doing our piece. Many groups around the world were doing their pieces. Bringing in the new year, and some are saying that this equinox in particular was because of, there's a lot of debate of when we actually start the age of Aquarius, but some were saying that this might be, you know, because of this special alignment and blah, 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 this might be the actual, you know, either anchoring or the beginning of the age of Aquarius. In any case, we are entering a new age, if not already in it, and it's just getting grounded. And the age of Aquarius is, you know, I think of it a lot in the sense of the movie we've been working on water, which is, you know, water is the medium for life. We live on a water planet, and we are mostly water, and water is a living substance. And we need to wake up, remember this, and treat the waters in our body and in our planet on this water world we live in differently than we have. And that will restore health and vitality to the planet. And it seems like there's a great interest growing just naturally in this topic of water and that, how to treat it, what kind of water to drink, you know, how do we distribute water on the planet so that it's, you know, more balanced. We don't lack water. Mm-hmm. We lack distribution in a balanced way. People wanting to hold and hoard water and own water rights. You know, there's a huge, huge revolution going on right now in many areas on the planet. But water is a really key piece for the health and vitality of the planet.
And I think that's, you know, something that was even, well, last year when I first met you at the cultural conference in Boulder, Colorado, I met a lady from Aqualuve, and she was doing a Tesla-type approach to the water on, it was the fall equinox, so she had everyone put gems in their waterways wherever they were at to do the vibration change that the water would need.
Yeah.
And, I would love to have you meet her. She lives in Manitou Springs, and she's an amazing woman and does a lot of Tesla work, you know, to change the planet. And it's still about vibration, you know, and us being of water. That's why the vibration affects us so much and why music is such a powerful piece, you know, and that's been a huge piece for thousands and thousands of years in all kinds of rituals and ceremonies, you know, that are just now really coming to light because of the way, it's like the world's smaller, but actually it's bigger because now we can see into all kinds of different areas and we can travel there.
Yep, exactly.
You know, and I know that you've traveled quite a bit with that and you've seen, you know, a lot of different, you know, practices and changes, you know, in your experience. If you could talk a little bit more about your water film and how people can find out about it, that would be great.
Yeah, we just had our premiere in New York and in Boulder, and it also showed at the Sedona Film Festival all within the last 2 months. We've been working on it for about 4 years. It's called Secret of Water, and the website is secretofwaterthemovie.com. And it's not quite available on DVD, and it will be for live available on Gaiam TV for live streaming. But this movie, you know, it's a really big topic, but what we are focusing on is the fact that water is a living substance, and how showing this, how the science is, you know, studying the properties of water and saying, well, every known property of water is an anomaly, 63 anomalies. It defies all the laws of physics,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's the one key for life. So I think, well, maybe we got to rewrite our physics, number one. You know, because if water is the key to life and it doesn't fit into our model, then there's a problem here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not rewrite our physics. It's more like update. You know, we need an upgrade in all of our, you know, programs, belief systems on the planet,
mm-hmm.
and especially around water. And so most people think of water as just this, you know, clear, you know, liquid that, you know, you have to drink. But they don't think about it. They don't think about, well, what is water? What's in it? Is it just H2O molecules? What else besides there, even if you remove all the dissolved solids in it, because sometimes there's minerals or different things from the land that have leached into it, what is water? You know, and what they don't realize, because we've been so in a materialistic cycle, the Kali Yuga, how the Vedas describe these huge cycles of time, the Iron Age is a very heavy time of consciousness. It's a dark time. It's like the Dark Ages. We're just coming out of this now. And what we do is we forget that we are, you know, all the one creator, basically, and that we are not limited beings, that we're passing through the third dimension, so we are not our physical bodies. We are learning what it's like for our consciousness to go through the third dimension, but it's not who we are. It's just a piece of who we are. It's a piece of the spectrum, the rainbow of life, of the vast life that's beyond, you know, this realm. And so people are kind of starting to wonder, what is water? And so our movie kind of focuses on the science and the mysticism and how, you know, different cultures religiously have, you know, viewed water, baptism, and every culture around the world uses water as a kind of medium to connect with spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that? But it kind of weaves together. I mean, it's a very, like, intense informational, you know, journey. Like, get ready for a lot of content. And it's basically, you know, opening the field for discussion. You know, we're not saying we're the masters, we know exactly what water is and how to treat it, but this is the result from treating it this way. This is how emotions affect water. This is how sound affects water. This is how if you store water in a certain way or it moves in a certain way, this is how it affects the energy of water. Because water isn't just a physical molecule. It also has energy. The way that the molecules bond to each other creates a geometry. And then when you freeze it, for example, in Dr. Moto's work and some other scientists that are now replicating it, they're showing the geometry of the crystal that you see when it freezes is a mirror of the health of the water. And if it doesn't have any kind of geometry, that's giving you an indication. And usually that's water that's very polluted or been treated very poorly and isn't water you'd want to put in your body. So from multiple approaches, you know, the movie is saying, hey, you know, this is what water is, and this is how we can treat it to revitalize it, to not just physically, but with our consciousness, how people praying into water, groups of people, individuals, how we've used certain science, especially these Russian amazing technologies that show the energy of things, including the human body and water and space. They can measure these things. So if you do these certain things that right now we don't have any way to measure, intention, prayer, all the things that humans have been doing for thousands of years to affect, you know, healing or changing the environment in some way, now we can show, wow, you know, the energy increases X number of times, you know, exponentially. And this is what you want, is vitalized energetic water. which relates to food, and food is mostly water. And so, you know, if you bless your food, like many cultures have rituals for before, that's actually really doing is affecting the water in the food, which is mostly what the food is, which is mostly what we are is water. And so it's that kind of movie. It's and I scored it, so I did all the music. So the intention was to take you on this journey with the sounds as healing and all the beautiful imagery that we really focused on, it being a very beautifully orchestrated array of images that take you down this river of information of the movie. And we just hope that it'll, you know, go wherever it's supposed to go and give the information and invite people to dialogue and to open up conversations on what we can do to bring health back to the planet.
Exactly. Can you tell them the website again that they can find this information on The Secret of Water?
Yes, secretofwaterthemovie.com. And it's not available yet, but now that it's finished premiering, we're going to get going on having the DVDs available, and it will be available on Gaiam TV, which is Conscious Media Network. They have thousands of titles that are all Conscious Media, movies and interviews, and it's an amazing resource, and it'll be on that. That's GaiamTV.com.
Okay.
And so it'll be streamed. It's kind of like Netflix, but only Conscious Media. And it'll be on that one within the next few months, we're guessing. So, but the website will say when, you know, that timing is.
And then I'm going to take a little break, play the piece of music that you had me upload, and then if we could talk about how you came up with this piece of music and what was involved in developing it, that would be really nice. And then talk about your private practice when we come back.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to mute you, and we'll go to your beautiful song here in just 1 second.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Kimba. That was a very beautiful piece that you put together, Peace Journey. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about the development of Peace Journey?
That was on one of my first albums, my second album, I guess, of the 12 that I have out. I was on tour in Japan, and that was when I first had connected with Dr. Emoto on that tour, and he wasn't very well known back then. This was like 2002, but I had come across his book in Kauai, and I was like, oh, this is like exactly what I'm doing, you know, but water, you know, like this is the same consciousness. And so when I was there, we connected, and he sampled the water from the concerts I was doing in the crystal bowls and photographed it. And that whole album, Peace Journey, and that song is called Peace Journey, was kind of done during that journey. It's a very amazing, intense, beautiful time. I love that country, Japan, and the people. That song, I had just found out that someone very dear to me had just passed away, like within an hour of recording that song, and I really felt his presence there. And while I was doing the chant and doing the flute, it was kind of like his spirit was there, and it was midwifing him, you know, through these realms of the betweens as he journeys. You know, and that is a part of my work. And my last album, Crossing the Great Waters, was specifically intended to midwife people through the in-betweens of death and their next destination. Many cultures believe that, you know, it is an unfolding process, and that music and different ways we can help with that process with our prayers and with our consciousness, we can help them to gracefully let go and go to the beyond. So the peaceful journey was dedicated to that, to helping the souls who, you know, sometimes when, you know, when we leave this world and we drop our body, you know, that it, you know, it's a huge, huge, huge journey. And we could use a little help. And that was the intention that's the intention of a lot of the music I do, but I, you know, my studies of the Bardos and the Buddhist teachings of, you know, these realms in between is like, we're always in a Bardo. Life is a journey. And, you know, not just when you die, but there are, you know, we could always use help with these transitions that we go through throughout all of our soul's journey through the realms, through this life and beyond.
I have a caller that has some questions and some comments. Cecil, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Cecil? Okay.
Good afternoon.
Cecil, this is Kimba, and you guys go on ahead and talk.
Hi.
Kimba, how are you? How are you?
Hi.
I've done a little bit of research in the area of music myself, and music for the purpose of healing. And I was wondering, what sort of inspiration or background or preparation did you have when entering into this area of music from a therapeutic standpoint?
Well, I was trained in music from a very young age. My parents, I went to music school and, you know, in like grade school, during the summers music camp, and I studied classical piano and silver flute, and I loved music, like I loved, but I didn't like performing, like I didn't like anyone to watch me. I'm a pretty shy person, and I was really shy, you know, growing up, and so I was like, I didn't see it as something I loved, like it was my medicine. Like there'd be big family gatherings, and I would go in the other room to play piano, because that was how I found balance. You know, I'm really sensitive. I'm just a sensitive being, and being around people and a lot of energies, music was my medicine. And then growing up through high school, you know, I was really into music, and certain bands, and it was like all my friends. It was just like, yeah, it was good in the 80s. You know, it was good music back then, I would say. It was wholesome, you know, and so I was fortunate to have that exposure. But I didn't see it as a life path. You know, I didn't want to perform, per se. That kind of wasn't my style. And so I went to, you know, college. I studied molecular biology, and I was pre-med, and I was pretty good in math and science. It's music, you know, math is music, and so I was good at that, you know, and I wanted to be in the healing arts. So the only thing I really was exposed to in my childhood was my dad was a doctor, so I was like, well, this is a way I can help others, because I felt called in that way too. But right as I was graduating, this was 92, I was graduating college and about to enter medical school, and I had this experience that I call my awakening. And at the time, I didn't know what it was. I knew what triggered it, and it's kind of a long, it is a long story, so I won't go into it. But basically, it was like changed my life. I was a different person from one day to the next. And it was basically, it was a near-death experience. And through this journey that happened, this one night with this group of friends. And the only reason I had that language for it was during my voracious reading following that day, which continues 23 years later, I read a book called Life After Life. And I really got into looking into, you know, all aspects of spirituality. And Raymond Moody wrote this book categorizing all the experiences of people who have had near-death experiences. I had every single aspect of that. And I had a language for it. I was like, wow, this was a look at the beyond. It was the most spiritual experience. I called it my awakening. I just had no idea that I was a spirit in a body before that day. And that's after that day, it was like, there's no way I was going to go. I got not only a life review, I got a life preview. I was shown what age I would die, what my diagnosis would be, how it would all happen in this kind of multidimensional, you look outside of time and you can just see your whole life as like an object almost. And I saw all my history, all my past, and the future of the path I was on. But I was given a choice upon returning that I could change my life. And upon returning, it was like there was no chance I was going to go to medical school. It totally wasn't my heart's path. It wasn't my dharma, my reason to be alive that my soul chose before I incarnated. But I didn't quite know what it was. And I knew that I had to follow my heart, but I didn't know what to do with my life. I was like a baby, and I was 21 and had all this training and all these years of schooling. And so within a month of that time, the didgeridoo came into my life through a very interesting synchronicity. And it wasn't popular back then either. I'd never heard one, seen one. It was just, you know, there's a story how it came into my life. But when I heard the sound, this lady played it on campus, and I was like, that sound is the only thing that makes sense to me. I need to get one of these and play it. And I did. I got one the next day, and it hasn't left my side since. It's become my number one teacher, that sound. And what I realize is that sound of the didgeridoo, which is one note, but it's got the whole spectrum of sound in it. One note contains all the notes. It's like white light, kind of. And it's the oldest instrument in the world. And what it did is it connected me to this place that I went when I died, the dream time, the Aboriginals call it. And through playing that instrument, and I just took off. I'm like, I'm getting out of the country. So I went to New Zealand. I was like, I'm leaving. America's crazy. You know, I don't want anything to do with this country, and I was going to move. But I had the didgeridoo, and I knew that I had to follow my heart. And I just backpacked around. I had the didge. I went, like, bungee jumping, did all these crazy things, just looking for my way and freeing myself and changing my diet, changing my belief systems. And all the way, I played this sound of the didgeridoo. And that sound, that key, which brought me out of my mind, which was very strong, very developed, into my heart, my heart's mind, you know, my center, through the breath and through the sound and just through the meditational quality of sitting and distilling through the playing of this instrument, it guided me. And, you know, if you follow your heart, it will guide you to what you're supposed to be doing with your life. And back then, like, nobody was doing sound therapy. I had never heard of it before in 92, 93, 94. But first I met Jonathan Goldman, because I moved to Hawaii to study acupuncture, and because I was like, well, maybe that's it. And then in acupuncture school, they said, well, before they used needles — this was a Taoist school, it was a very mystical school — they used sound instead of needles, directed the meridians. So I learned how to take care of myself through going to acupuncture school, but it got me interested in sound even more. And then it started to awaken this love that I have of music when I was a kid, that I was always naturally good at, and it was my medicine. And so it's, you know, it's, everyone has such a long story if you go through their life story, and I won't go infinite details. But the essence of it, what got me into what I'm doing, is this wake-up call. I'm 21, and I'm now 44. And, you know, it's been guiding me. Just follow your heart. And for me, sound was an integral key, somehow, using music and frequency and my intention behind it, to be it, for it to be healing for others, because I'm here to serve. I know that much. That's why I want to go to medical school or acupuncture school. But using music, then I found it's an ancient tool to midwife people through the dying process to help them heal spiritually. And that filters down to the physical, because we're primarily energy before we're physical. And so, blah, blah, blah. That's a little bit, try to shorten the story. Is that helpful?
It is. And I noticed you mentioned that that music is mathematics, which was actually, I guess, like you were reading my mind, because my second question was if whether or not you were familiar with the Schillinger system, which is a system of music based on mathematics, in fact, by a gentleman by the name of Joseph Schillinger. And if you're not familiar with it, it would be very interesting if you could pick up the book called Schillinger System, where he approaches music from a mathematical standpoint. And I was looking into music first and dealing with music and soundscape and using music as a healing tune, as a healing modality, I got away from being melodic or looking for traditional melodies and harmonies, and more into the vibration of the being, because music is also vibration, and of course vibration for mathematics, because it's the number of frequencies or the number of times in a second which the particular sound vibrates. Okay, so if you're talking about music, which is like, or any particular tone, it's like every sound that you hear, or every tone, has like 127 other subtones or overtones that you hear. Some you hear, some you do not hear, but they make up that particular sound that you're hearing. So when you, or if you hear a note, for instance, you say, ah, that's a C, but that C has other harmonics in it that helps give that C definition.
Yeah.
And the same with the human body, which if you hook a body up to meters and you're reading its vitals, you're listening to frequencies and sounds and so forth, those are the kinds of things that I got into with music, listening to the frequencies and trying to see what frequencies may be out of alignment, where there's discord, and how to bring a body back into harmony with itself, you know, and maybe creating sounds that would, more so than songs or melodic patterns and so forth, actual sounds that would call a body back into sync or back into harmony mm-hmm. through the process known as entrainment.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like I said, that's basically just my approach and some things that I'm working with at this time.
Are you, well, one thing on my website also, I have a big page with a lot of content on the tuning of 432 for A, because when you're working with a note, let's say the note C, you know, the way we calculate, speaking of mathematics, the way we calculate a note is all relative in the, in, you know, the musical systems around the world at this time. We calculate all the notes relative to the note A. And A right now is, we don't even question it, is considered to be 440 hertz. And that's 440 cycles per second.
Well, that's not so, though. I guess you've come to find out that that's not so also.
Well,
but
I
yes,
mean, that's what I'm saying about the 432 system. There's the 444
right.
system, and there's many things in between. And so what happens is we take the note A, and there's a fraction number that you calculate. You multiply the 440 by to get the number of hertz for all the other notes in the scale. And what we've found with the 440 system, which is only within the last 100 years, we've had 440 as the standard tuning. So everybody in an orchestra, for example, will tune to the note A, 440. That's how everyone stays in the same key. But A can
right.
be anything within a certain range. And so A, if you have it at 440, all the other notes turn out to be endlessly repeating fractional numbers, you know, like 470.2398765, you know, every other note will have a frequency range that is fractionated. And, you know, it's not like a whole, it's like a point, it's not quite a whole hertz frequency. Now,
right.
if you
well.
Use 432, and I'm not saying this the only way, but it is an ancient tuning that was used by many cultures, and I've been exploring this for the last 15 years, this tuning, our pianos in 432, and this is what many of my indigenous instruments that I play are in, naturally some, and some tuned to that. All the other notes that are calculated relative to 432, which is just slightly flat, I mean, it's barely audibly perceptible, but it does sound, you know, 8 hertz is you know, a little bit flat of what we're normally hearing if you relative to 440. But all the other notes in the scale come out to be significant whole numbers. And not only whole numbers, but they were the exact, for example, one of the notes is the exact height of the Great Pyramid, the King's Chamber, the height of the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid. Exact number is one of the notes. Another one is the exact number of years in the precession of the equinoxes. You know, and there's many things like this. You can find them encoded in these ancient sites around the world, these certain numbers that meant something to the ancient people who built them that way specifically. So the fact that you could have a scale that's harmonic to itself, and not only that, but it's harmonic to the sacred structures that are placed on geometrical points. The planet has a geometry, has an energetic geometry with nodal points around it. That's why, you know, these locations are, you know, like power spots because of the geometry, an energetic Merkaba or other geometries that the planet has. And I believe that if we work with music that's aligned with the proportions of the cosmos and the human body, which has natural Fibonacci proportions, then we can start to really affect harmonization by entrainment, you know, what you refer to. But I think the tuning that we choose is really important, and most people don't even consider that fact, that that's underlying the music that we're producing. What's the
tuning? Go ahead.
No, that was it.
Well, I was going to say, that's the reason why when I sit down to compose or to even to explore sound from a theoretical standpoint of view, I don't go into tempered scales or using a 440 or anything of that nature for analyzation or even sound reproduction. I'll start with an oscillator, using an oscilloscope and sending a signal through and comparing the frequency. If I'm looking at the frequencies maybe of somebody's chart or something like that, I will look at creating a frequency to match it using an oscilloscope, where I tune or pitch the frequency to match the frequencies and thereby creating the sound, you know, and not so much as using a temperature scale trying to match, because it would never work. Because
right.
There's too much in between. As, say, for instance, I have a background as a musician also, and I play a lot of blues music. In music, they've got what they call blue notes. Well, in African traditional culture, and also in blues, in our Western culture here, we tuned our guitars and we tuned our instruments like we felt them, not like somebody told us that it should be tuned. We heard as we heard it at a soul level, and it tuned it that way. And when we're playing and we decide to do what music calls bend a note, we bend the note because we're trying to get to a particular feeling or create a particular emotional nuance that is not particularly covered in a 12-tone tempered scale system, you know. So we did a lot with the in-between. Also, I had experience playing the kora, which is an African instrument, string instrument, and it is in no way tuned to our traditional 12-tone tempered scale. So I'm familiar with working outside of A440. It has been said that A440 was actually deliberately done to move us away from the more sacred and true human power of music, in order to recondition our minds or recondition people to be less natural, thereby less able to correct any ailments, or be the physical or emotional or spiritual ailments or what have you. So, and which is one of the reasons they were saying that the 432 was phased out in favor of 440. 432, of course, equals the number 9. Number 9 in numerology is a number of completion. It has both 4, which represents physical manifestation, and 5, which is spiritual manifestation, which gives you 9. 4 and 5 is 9, which actually represents total manifestation. You know, so when I see those numbers over and over again, and I add them up, and they constantly come out to 9, I said, well, I started looking at that early in my music career, and I said, wait, these numbers are constantly coming up to nine when I was dealing with frequencies more so than music notes, tempered scale. And so I got on another path as a result of that. And when I discovered Schillinger and the way that he used mathematics to produce music, and if you study Schillinger, Schillinger was a very, very prolific, composer, and also he was an educator. He taught in New York, and he taught Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller, George Gershwin studied with him for 4 years. Some of the greatest composers in music today, contemporary composers in music today, studied with him. In fact, at the time that Gershwin wrote Porgy and Bess, he was studying with Schillinger.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for your question. It was really nice to talk with you. And good luck with your musical endeavors as they continue.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
Good luck with you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cecil.
You're
welcome. Bye. So, Kemba, when we listen to the Peace Journey, and I don't know if different people understand by listening to that, that you're playing numerous instruments at once. And that's quite a gift all in itself, because I've seen you perform, and you can play the didgeridoo and the crystal bowls that you have and the water piano and stuff and the Native American flutes, and you just get it to flow so beautifully, and you're the only one up there doing it, and it sounds like it's an orchestra. Can you explain to us how you are able to have that? I mean, it's not just rhythm, it's the coordination of doing it all. And did it take you a while to learn that part?
Well, I mean, if I'm playing a wind instrument like a flute, I pretty much, if it involves both hands, like that's the only instrument I'm going to be playing. I
mm-hmm.
might, you know, play some water that I recorded in Kauai on the stream I lived on, you know, in the background or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends on what I'm doing. What I try to do in a sound journey as everyone's lying on the ground is, you know, I have all the instruments laid out and I work intuitively because it's based on the group vibration and the energy of the land and the astrology of that day. And I'm just meant to be the messenger, you know, of the frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know what's to happen. I just have everything ready. And my intention is to just, you know, create a soundscape that flows from one into the other. They're not really songs, either, I would say. And if there is a song, it's not repeatable unless you record it, because it's always a new creation. That's the nature of the kind of music I play. And that's why I'll never get bored with what I'm doing, because it only evolves as my ability to just be a clearer vehicle for the wind, for the breath of the spirit, which blows through all of us. And in a group situation, that's kind of my role, you know, of the one group. And, you know, we're all one. We all have different roles, though, and how we all serve the one to rejoice in this life. You know, we're all here to really to rejoice. And we forget that, but, you know, that's what it is. And how we all serve each other, you have to find your place and bring that to the group. But I don't see myself in a group situation as a leader. This is that's my function, and we're gathered to do this kind of thing right now, which is a meditative healing journey. But
mm-hmm.
every single person is a part of the creation of that vibration of the space, and all of our guides and ancestors that we call in and that show up, and the land that we're upon, and the devas that are in that area, you know, they're all a part of this vibration that I choose instruments that accommodate the transmission into audible form, these subtle frequencies. That's why I love overtone-based instruments. And the didgeridoo that I play now is a crystal didgeridoo that I design, because the crystal, I've been playing the wooden ones from agave, the cactus in the area where I grew up. But now with the crystal, it's like the overtones and the harmonics. You can really hear the spectrum of sound, like Cecil was saying, you know, a note has many other sounds on top of that note, which are its overtones and harmonics. If you just heard a straight note, that would sound like, you know, like a tone generator on your computer is just a straight note with no harmonics or overtones, and it's just a straight sine wave. But when you hear sounds, music or anything in nature, there's a whole spectrum of sounds on top of that. That I believe is where, you know, for example, our body has a fundamental tone, that sine wave of the physical, the body that you see, but all the other parts of us, which are all the energy bodies, our aura and our emotional body and our mental body and everything in between, are our overtones and our harmonics. And so those are what I'm touching upon with the harmonics of these instruments, of the crystal bowls or the overtone flutes or the overtones of the crystal didgeridoo, and appealing to that part that doesn't always get touched. And I do believe that in nature, there are so many natural, especially the sound of water. It's such a complex sound. And when I record it, I use a very special recorder called a Super Audio device, that Super Audio or DSD, Direct Stream Digital, which is a kind of recording technology that records 2.4 million samples per second. And what you hear on like a CD is 24,000 samples per second. And if you have it, if the audio DVD, it's like 96,000. This is 2.4 million. So when I record water, you know, you're capturing a little bit more of that complex frequency of overtones that is in that sound. And I believe that there's a lot of healing that's occurring by having the harmonics of our body touched by these sounds of nature or music created with love and intention to carry the wave of that healing energy. Because the music's the carrier wave for our intention, basically. You can have someone who has a perfect operatic voice, but they're like a jerk and they don't care about anybody and their voice isn't going to move you. You know, but if someone could have a scratchy voice, or they're not that good at, you know, a musician technically, but if they have that deep spirit, I mean, there's a line, you know, where there's some skill is needed for it to touch you, but there, you know, transcends that because the music is the carrier wave for this. And so, you know, when I do a sound journey, whether it's a private session or a group journey, you know, it's like I try to weave all these different instruments together seamlessly so the person isn't interrupted by, you know, space. Like there isn't, the silence is for afterwards, you know, where you can assimilate everything that's happened. And that's a really important part of music, is that silent space right afterwards. So you asked about me playing multiple instruments. Like, when I can, you know, I will. The didgeridoo and the crystal ball are perfect match, like the male and the female.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll play the crystal ball while it's still going, go into another instrument, play the waterphone or some other instruments. But, you know, I still have only two hands.
Right.
And sometimes I like to work with other musicians, as I am starting to do
right.
more. Josh and Seth at the event, they are beautiful voices, and they do harmonies with the didgeridoo, and we're working on a mantra CD right now. So, you know, it's always vast and expanding, the realm of...
And it's always moving forward.
Yes.
Can you let the listeners know how to reach you again? Because we're almost out of time for today. It was a beautiful interview, Kemba. And let our listeners know how to reach you. And then I'm also going to close with playing the Peace Journey again.
Okay. My website is Gaia Earth. I call it, it's like a merging of Gaia, the old spelling, G-A-E-A, and the word Earth. So it's G as in God, A as in apple, and the word Earth, Gaia Earth, GaiaEarth.com. So they can email me, Kimba@GaiaEarth.com. Gaia Earth has all my, you know, CDs and my downloadable. It has videos, interviews I've done, a lot of information about sound, 432, the water movie information. It's all there on the website.
You're like me. You stay busy and never are bored.
Never.
There's
no.
always a new project.
As long as there's breath in me, you know, there's always a way to use it
exactly.
coherently, you know, in service to the one. So.
Well, I'm going to play Peace Journey, and I will speak with you later, Kimba.
All righty.
Thank you very
Sansa.
Much.
Blessings.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for having me on. Have a great mm-hmm. day.
You
Blessings.
Too.
Bye.
Bye. What, Mom?